Sahana Vavatu, Sahanau Bhunaktu, Saha Viryam Karavavahai, Tejasvinavadhitamastu Ma Vidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
Oh, this is a nice question. I do know a little bit about this. Can you tell us a little about Swami Dayananda's name, what it means, and how he got that name? Well, Daya means compassion, you know. And so the one whose ananda is through compassion, or one whose ananda expresses as compassion. Or because we know that those gunas, those beautiful qualities that are natural to yourself, what is for Swamiji, what is just so highlighted in his being, what kind of person he is that daya. It's just infinite, endless compassion. And so it just, and the name that your guru, here in this case Swami Chinmayananda, is the one who, when giving sannyasa, will give the name. And so the name that he gave to Swamiji was Dayananda. But then people started to complain to Swamiji and said, how could you puja Swamiji to Chinmayanandaji? How could you give Swamiji that name? Because just a century before, or maybe not quite that long, but a good length of time before, but there was a very famous Swami Dayananda. And he did a lot of work in Dharma, you know. So if you were to Google Swami Dayananda, that name's the one that'll come first. And so the Swami Chinmayananda gave Swamiji a name that is already a famous name by a famous Swami. So they were, you normally wouldn't do that. And so they said something to Puja Swamiji about it. Puja Swamiji said, goes something like this, "What can I do?" He is Daya. He is Daya. You know? Because even then, that huge heart was there. And so, even in spite of that, that is who he is, Dayananda. Yeah. So I thought that was a really sweet story. Because I used to wonder, why did he do that? Because in Swamiji's, in his own greatness and bigness, he's always overshadowed in Google. By this other Swami is exactly the same name, so that's usually not something that is done. But anyway, what can I do? He is that. He is that. How can I work on not having expectations on myself and others? Well, I don't think it's so much about not having expectations. In other words, like you give somebody a duty, some sort of a duty, a job to do, and you do expect that they will do it, you know. Or you're planning to accomplish something and you have expectations. So we do, it's just like we have dagda bija raga dveshas, you know, those burnt seeds means they're non binding desires. I think our expectations also have to be non-binding. That doesn't mean that you don't have expectations. It's just that when those expectations are not met, then we kind of have to accept the fact of that and move on, try something else, appoint somebody else, see if you can patch up whatever has been left out, that type of thing. But it doesn't need to be something which brings in the critical voice or the angry person, or, you know. Swamiji always says, you be objective. You just learn to be objective. Objective means non-binding desire. It means whatever, I still try to accomplish this, try to accomplish that, I delegate responsibilities. You know, but if something doesn't go well, then we just deal with that and try to fix it up. But nothing has to happen to me inside at all. Zero. That's the beautiful thing to understand. There's no reason that I have to become upset or hurt or angry. But that takes, you know, some time to get there, because we're coming from the opposite, as you'll see. I think it's the very next verse, like, what is night for a jnani is day for an ajnani, and what is day for an ajnani is night for a jnani. So it's, Swami will say it's ulta. Ulta means it's all upside down. So when we get this vision, instead of being a little person walking the world and the self of the whole creation. So that takes a little assimilation, you know. And that I'm searching for ananda and happiness and trying to make my way, rather than the prarabdha karma is leading my life. You know, and I am the ananda that I seek. So it's quite a shocking, or I would say more like this. You would think it would be quite shocking, but because it is you, it's a relief. Otherwise, there's a lot of things in our life that should be really shocking, like just going from the waking state to the dream state, where you find yourself in a whole different universe, and then there's, you go to the deep sleep and there's nothing there. Don't you think that's strange? And, but it's not strange at all. It's not strange because it's the nature of the creation, and it's the nature of myself, and I've been transmigrating from beginningless time, so these things aren't strange. And the truth of my being is not strange either, because it's always been the truth of my being. And now finally everything makes sense. At the same time, it's ulta. It's night and day, you know. So it takes some time for the mind that's, you know, kind of situated in ajnanam, in self-ignorance, once that's removed, for all of the samskaras, all of the thought patterns, all of the associations, you know, have to reroute themselves. They have to change. They have to now have me as their adhishtana, rather than the body and the mind as the adhishtana, you know. So that takes some time. You know, they have to represent themselves in light of my now, my buddhi that has knowledge. That's what has to happen. Yeah. So it's kind of like I told you the story when I went back to Berkeley, and these, for many, the same old, identical old issues that I'd totally forgotten about came up. But the positive thing, which I was to learn, I had no expectation of that happening, but the positive thing that I learned is that they do come up into a different buddhi, you know, one that has knowledge, and you deal with it so much differently, and they resolve quickly, actually. But they're all there just waiting to be able to come into consciousness in the presence of the one who has knowledge. Which again gets back into this karma yoga buddhi, and why Arjuna was told, you know, by Krishna to, you know, stay in your place, do your duty with this knowledge, gaining this knowledge, being with this knowledge, stay in your place, stay in your world, you know. Don't try to run away from it. Probably told you the story last year, the year before. I know I haven't told it this year. Sometimes I only have so many stories, and I don't remember who I tell which one. At some point, everybody's heard every single story. When I was at CIS, you know, there was, for several years, I mean, from the time I got there until just 3 years ago, when one faculty member retired, he'd been there the whole time. In fact, he was there, he had been there 2 years before I was hired, and I was hired in 96. And so he was actually involved in hiring me. But for whatever reason it was, he just made my life really difficult. And he used to be really irritating to me in a way also, because he would always skate out on his responsibilities and the rest of us would have to pick it up. You know, we'd have to pick up all the work that he wouldn't do, you know. Of course, when he left, another one took his place. So that's, he just said, oh, okay, it's okay. But so he would skate, and then he would also be kind of very harsh and critical of us, especially women. You know, so whenever we were in a faculty meeting and he would start talking, the women in the faculty meeting would kind of look at each other and go, what is this? You know? So anyway, he was difficult. He was really difficult for me. And I used to was telling Swamiji, you know, Swamiji, I've worked here for a long time. I'm really ready to retire. So this is a problem. There's no end in sight. You know, and I just don't want to have to deal with it anymore, and I think I've worked here long enough. And so Swamiji says, yes, definitely you can retire as soon as you have no problem with him. I don't remember, there's another instance I'm trying to remember that was similar. You know, but then when he said that, I said, yeah, you know, all right. Because there's some truth in it, you know. You don't want, it makes you weak. In fact, he said things like this, it makes you weak if you can't just be in the situation and see it through, you know. Learn how to work with this person instead of thinking, you know, it's time for you to go. Unless, of course, the prarabdha is such that it really is time for you to go, whether there's a difficult person or not. That's kind of different. But when you're making a decision to leave, when nobody wants you to leave, and it's not really time to leave from anybody else's perspective, and maybe not for your own either, it's just you don't want to deal with this hassle. That is why you're leaving. You know, that's not a good reason to leave. It's better to stay and work it out. And actually, we became friends. The last couple of years, we were actually, you know, put up with each other laughingly. That was nice. I'm glad I did see that through. But that's that karma yoga buddhi where you have to be able to be with the people that are causing you problems and realize that's your sadhana. This person is causing you problems. You've probably had the experience where somebody who's causing you a lot of problems is really a close friend of somebody else. You know, they're not, and they're just enjoying conversing, and you know, and the person that they're enjoying conversing with can be your friend. You know, and yet with you, they're causing all kinds. There's all kinds of tension and strife and all of that. You know, and so, how to be with that situation or with that person who seemingly is very difficult for you? How to be with that person in a way where there's no difficulty at all, where there's no raga there. Like, it kind of goes like this, you know, this fellow, in order for me to really have a nice life being here, you have to change. That, it just doesn't work. You would just say, I think you have to change, you know. It's just not how it is. You know, you have to have the tools inside to get to a place where you can be with anybody. You know, without losing your shanti or without losing your compassion or your care or your love, you should be able to be with anyone. The master of that is Pujya Swamiji. He is a master of it. You know, because of the many years both our Swamiji and myself spent with him, we saw over and over and over again, it's not like there weren't challenging people, challenging board members, challenging devotees, challenging students who could actually be very exhausting in their demands, you know, and continual. And I never saw him, you know, push anybody away or make them feel like they weren't loved and wanted. He just didn't relate like that. He was just himself and dealt with all of these situations objectively, you know? Like if there's a problem or this person has a problem or this person's upset, then that's the reality. There's no reason for me to get upset about that. They're upset and that upset has to be dealt with, you know? But why should I get upset? He used to always tell me, because I would get upset, he used to always tell me, you know, keep everybody outside. You have to keep people outside. No, don't let them come in, you know? Because then you're carrying them around with you. And he's carrying the whole relationship around with you. He said, keep them outside. And he'd say things like, you know, they don't have to like you. You know, they can like you, they can not like you. Let them like you or not like you. They have a right to like you or not like you. Give them their own space to be and feel as they are. And so, we have to put the, incense up. Give them the space to be as they are. All we know that they're coming from your guru, the one you have so much shraddha in. You know, these words all are something you reflect upon. And, oh, is that? Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's good. Yeah. Anyway,
stories.
When something painful happens, we Vedantins seem to forget that we are not our dukkha-vritti. How do you create a habit to stop as soon as dukkha arises, and what tools do you use to tools do you learn to disidentify from your emotional state? Thanks. Well, there's a some things, longer term time helps, just time with this knowledge, because what happens is as your mind starts to settle just from the shravana itself, over time your mind starts to settle more and more and more, and as that happens just naturally, this is not without any tools, just the shravana manana nididhyasana, being in the sangha where there's kind of a protection there, your mind starts to settle down and you much more enjoy just the shanti that you have. And that shanti in your own mind becomes valuable enough that you don't want to disturb it. And so in that not wanting to disturb, you know, it's much easier to just let things go, you know, to be objective, to let it go, to not engage. So that's one thing. But another thing is all of the inner child work we're doing and all of the meditation techniques and the techniques for dealing with our mind and our complexes and the people we don't like and all of those things. If we really have that as part of our practice, part of our meditative practice, because actually we can't really meditate when our mind is, you know, disturbed. And so the first part of the meditative practice, I think, should be doing this inner child work or bringing up the things that are bothering you or that are upsetting you, or if there's somebody you're having a really hard time with, doing some pratipaksha bhavana with that person or even sitting that person with in front of you and having that type of dialogue, you know, or seeing what happened to bring this thing about so you can just offer the whole thing up to Bhagavan. This type of work that we do in meditation is something that becomes natural to us, you know, especially the inner child work, because most of the time when you're upset, the one who's really upset is the little one inside. Otherwise, it's pretty easy for us to be objective, you know. But the thing is when a lot of that childhood pain, which is really big, you know. Well, let me put it this way. Have you ever seen a little child having a temper tantrum or crying her eyes out, you know? Or a little, like a 6-month-old or 1-year-old baby who's just crying and its whole little body is crying and wailing and, you know, because he needs his diaper changed. You know. Just the whole body is totally involved in that. So for that little body, that's a pretty big, you know. It's pretty big. Right. So pretty big emotions, you know, that happen in little ones. So they might seem small to us, but they're not. For little ones, they're small. And so that big emotion is stored in the psyche, because it's so big that, you know, your psyche has to come and take care of it for you. The defense system has to come and take it away. So we have all of these type of things inside, and so we get used to when I have an emotion coming up, to being with it. That becomes just what I do. I don't have to be meditating to do that. If there's an emotion that comes up, I just automatically am with it before before I just take it for granted that that person did that to me, that person did that, that person hurt my feelings, that person did this and that and this and that, which has left me in this terrible condition. Instead, I'm right immediately with the emotion, like objectifying it and dialoguing with it. You're really hurt. Tell me what's really going on. Because I never really feel that it's what's happening out here. What's happening out here you can handle. It's what is triggered inside that's a problem. Yeah. There's something going on.
Yeah,
okay. Oh, yeah, okay. Poor thing. Okay, so it's not that you're not right now, I mean, that during this camp we're learning all of these tools. Those are actually the tools, you know. So let me see exactly how you wrote that again. When something painful happens, we seem to forget. Yeah. That's because we're not used to being with that pain. We're used to reacting to the pain rather than come into relationship with it. Now, once you know how to come to relationship with it, then the whole Vedanta comes, actually. But that's the unusual thing. That's the thing we're not used to. But that's exactly what I mean, is that in our meditative practice, you learn, if you do that at the beginning part of your meditation, and over time that part takes less and less time. But if you spend that time at the beginning of your meditation, it just becomes kind of habitual to do that, you know, and it just makes a huge difference to your own shanti. Then whenever some pain is triggered, you don't try to push it away. You just don't, in almost like an instinct, you know, react, like impulsively just react at who you have superimposed the cause of that pain on, you know. That's normally what happens. I feel the pain and then I'm seeing who hurt me like that, and my mind is doing all kinds of things, building a web around that pain, which isn't dealing with the pain. It's just responding all over the place to the pain, but it's not dealing with the pain. Deal with the pain, I have to say, you're really, really hurt, you know, and feel it and welcome it and be with it. Don't try to push it away. And they say, tell me what's really bothering you. And they will tell you, you know. They can start by saying, this is what happened. Yeah, and I said, yeah, but why is it hurting you so much? Tell me. And then you get into a dialogue, and then you're dealing with the whole issues of pain, and tell you all kinds of things. And you know it. And it tells you, you know it, because it's you. You're the one that's a little piece of you that was taken away and you know, held in the body by the defense system. And so you know what it was. When it starts talking, you can say, I know, I remember. I know that. You know, but you know what? Your father's not here now. If it's a father problem. Your mom's not here now. I'm with you. That's not happening anymore. It's not going to happen anymore. Now you're with me. You know. But I know you're hurt. It's okay. We'll be fine. You have to welcome it and hold it. And you learn how to do that. And you learn how to do it with your little ones. Because they're your little ones and you know what they need. And you just be the parent that they need you to be. You know? It's really a beautiful thing. And over time, all of this unconscious stuff that we're holding, you know, gets healed. But we have to keep doing the work, doing that work. And it's not a bottomless pit, but it takes some time. Yeah. The big ones are not a bottomless pit. The little ones are kind of a bottomless pit, and there's thousands of them. They don't matter. You know, you don't cause that much pain. They can just come and go. Yeah. So.
Got a follow up question.
Yeah.
Do we ever have overreactions without little ones being involved?
That's a good question. I'm almost inclined to say no. I don't think so. It's not that we don't have reactions, though. Like raga dvesha, thwarted raga dvesha creates a reaction, you know. But then all of that, the pain, like a thwarted raga dvesha usually creates anger. You know, so you just have to kind of watch yourself now as your raga dveshas become thwarted and see what type of thing is produced. But it's the that deep, you know, that very deep hurt and sadness. I can't imagine a raga dvesha, thwarted raga dvesha, really doing that without it touching into somebody, into something else. Maybe, but I feel like most of the big emotions that have to do with isolation, sadness, low self-esteem, low self-worth, all of these things that hurt, deep hurts, abandonment issues, all of those things that are really big and very painful emotions, those all, you know, are bolstered by what we have inside. And so it takes, you have to really go and be with them. And that's what brings them out. Otherwise, they just sit there and project endlessly. They stay in the unconscious, and then they get triggered by events that happen out here. And then they overwhelm the buddhi, but the buddhi never doesn't know to deal with them, to come into relationship with them. It just acts out of them. So now this is who I am. Now I'm this really, really hurt person. You know. And then I'm responding to the whatever situation caused me to be that hurt person. I don't necessarily know until I'm taught, or you know, that's actually a projection. And the other thing, maybe some of you have really experienced this, that when you have a projection, for you, you don't know it's a projection. If you knew it was a projection, you couldn't have it, right? When you have a projection, you have no idea it's a projection. It seems absolutely real. And all projections are emotion-laden, right? And the problem with a projection is that the emotion is real. Whether it's a projection or whether it's happening out here, the emotion is real in the sense that you are experiencing that emotion. The projection is what is superimposing that emotion on whatever it's projected on. But the emotion, you can't say you're not feeling that emotion. You are definitely feeling that emotion. You know, and it could be any big emotion, like any type of abandonment or betrayal or, you know, hurt. All of these big ones that tend to come from childhood, they are so real because the emotion is real. You know, and so... And the emotion came in relationship, you know. And so you have to tell yourself that I know you are positive that this is what happened and that this person has done this. I know that you're absolutely positive and you know that that's true. That's how bad it is. You have to acknowledge that you absolutely know that it's true. And you don't have any doubt. And then you have to be able to say, and still, it may not be true. And still, even though you're absolutely positive, it still may be a projection. You know? I don't know if I've had the experience, actually, of something that was absolutely a projection. I've had it maybe two, or maybe we've had it many times, but I kind of remember the shock two or three times of recognizing that that is a projection, you know. And so I got into the habit of being able to say that, because, and there's only this little tiny portion of your buddhi that is even willing to say that because you believe it, you know. But I've had the experience of having that certainty, you know, and then realizing by something incontrovertible, I mean, there's no doubt that it was false. I don't remember exactly the instances now. I could probably dig it up, but I can't remember. But what I do remember is that I was just shocked, because I went to discover that that was totally not true, and I was so positive. you know, projection. It's amazing. And since I had the experience, I was lucky to have had the experience, then I had that little tiny room, little tiny corner of my buddhi that could say, no matter what you believe, I know you believe it fully, completely, and you have no doubt it could still be a projection. That's a big thing for a person to be able to say when you're positive. You're really positive, you know. But that's what you have to be able to say. But once you can say that, and that's one thing, that's an important thing, because when those real ones come. The other thing is to not forget to come into relationship with whatever that pain is. We tend to forget to do it. That's why in meditation, to have that always as part of your process. Before you really try to absorb your mind, you're actually settling your psyche, bringing the whole, not only the conscious mind to Dharma, to a state of Dharma and well-being in reference to all beings, to all people. And you'd want that, so you have that Shantavritti, but also doing that inner work to give the little ones inside some Shanti. And then with that Shanti, then you meditate. And it's very, your mind has that prasadam, you know, that tranquility. And then that meditation is useful. Also to go out in the world, it's nice to kind of clean everybody, give everybody some Shanti inside. You know, make everything okay with your meditative practice. And then go out in the world, you know, until everyone's okay and there's no problem. Which happens in time. But, you know, you can't, Swamiji says you can't have a little rosebud and decide you want it to open now, right now. So, here we go. Poor little thing, you know. It wasn't ready to open, and so now it's this crippled little rosebud. It's all awful. So you want to let your psyche flower in your love and respect. You know, the fact that you're a mumukshu is a huge thing. Beginningless lifetimes. It's not ordinary to come to this understanding. Become a mumukshu. So you deserve so much respect. All of the lifetimes that have come before that have given you the shanti and the viveka to even do this work, to care about Ishvara, you know, to want to know what the truth is. It's a really extraordinary. We don't think it's extraordinary because it's just us, but it is extraordinary. Yeah. So that means that this particular upadhi that you have is the result of crores of lifetimes of punya. That's the tradition. That's how much it's valued. It's crores of lifetimes of punya that you would bring you to this position and ready and to gain this knowledge and to do all of this work for Antakarana Shuddhi and have the values of Dharma as your highest values, that you're working for that. I want to be my buddhi to be an expression of love and compassion and care and warmth, which is who I am. That's who you are, you know. The buddhi is just responding from your being. And so, of course, those are our highest values, you know. Our mind isn't covered over in terms of that. So that's, you should... feel happy about yourself. Really. That you even come to this knowledge is a really big thing. For me too, for Swamiji, for all of us. We came to this knowledge is really a wonderful, wonderful thing. You know. It's the end game in chess. We're at the end game. Yeah. Well, that's good. Sure, these are done. Let's see. I had some things in there. I can't remember what it was, though. Next time we'll make it. A lot of times at the end of the meditation, there's some things I recognize that maybe we should talk about, but I don't feel like talking about it at the end of the meditation because we're all in kind of a meditative state. So I kind of don't want to dissect the meditation. So I'll think about it and try to do it at the beginning. Or make a note, because now I don't remember. I don't know, maybe it seeps out, like maybe this is part of it, I don't remember.
I had something about meditation. Maybe oh. I don't know if we could do it. Again, you were talking about today about the prasada buddhi.
Yeah.
That I am the prasada. And I was thinking if you could do like a meditation where, you know, if there's the dukkha, the sorrow that is pervading, but then the buddhi comes in to be in relationship with the pain.
Yeah.
And then you are the prasada medley. And then the recognition of the self that is free from it.
Okay. You want to do that in the meditation?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, we can do that. Have to remind me tomorrow.
Okay.
No, I like that. Yeah.
The chant, the Hare Krishna, Hare Rama.
Yeah.
Did you
yeah.
get the answer?
In fact, well, yeah. But the thing is, that I have to read it. Sharada sent me the little Sanskrit thing for the Hare Krishna Upanishad. In fact, what I was thinking of doing, maybe. I'll be ready to do it tomorrow night. I can bring that Upanishad and translate it for you. It's not very long.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. That would be really neat. We can see it. Okay. I'll do that. Yeah. I'll have time. We'll have time tomorrow. Yeah. So we're halfway there. Yeah. Yeah. Anybody else? I don't have anything right now either that I can think of.
Yeah, two beautiful voices and musicians here.
Yep. And we've got time to really have some beautiful bhajans.
Yeah.
Who's ready?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's do it. Is the harmonium? That harmonium is so nice, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because
nice.
We can really, really sing in full voice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's bring the harmonium.
Bring it.
I think it's kind of fitting for my voice to be able to put some kind of loud idea.
Yeah.
What?
Thank you.
Om Namah Shivaya.
confused.
It's very like I'm much better. I'm sitting here backstage.
Thank you. Love me when I can't find love myself. Prajabhyah Paripalayantam Nyayena Margena Mahimahishah O Brahmanebhyah Shubhamastu Nityam Loka Samasta Sukhino Bhavantu Kale Varshatu Parjanyah Prithivi Sasya Shalini Desho Yam Chobarahitah Brahmana santu nirbhayaha Om sarvesham swastir bhavatu Sarvesham shantir bhavatu Sarvesham purnam bhavatu Sarvesham mangalam bhavatu Sarve bhavantu sukhinaha Sarve santu niramayaha Sarve bhadrani pashyantu ma kaschit dukha bhav bhavet asato ma satyamaya tamaso ma jyotirgamaya mrityorma amritangamaya Om purnamadah purnamidam purnat purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha